Did you know that you have hidden efficiencies right there under your nose? And hey, you don't have to dig so deep to find them. What level of effort is it to get them? What level of effort is it to identify? More importantly, how much work is it to implement it? We're going to talk to a customer who's gone through the process, and you can see for yourself. What's it called? Value stream mapping, and that's this episode of Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm your host, Jerry Nixon. I'm here with Kevin, Brent, Brandon, and Dave. It's a full house. We're here talking with CGI Federal and the work we've done together. It's going to be a great episode. I'm going to start with the guys from CGI Federal. Brandon McBride, I know you're on the phone. I know you're in Virginia, of all places. Is it snowy in Virginia today?
No, it's not. It's actually a wonderful 62 degrees.
It's another beautiful day in Virginia. I lived many years in Virginia. It's a wonderful part of the world. Now, tell us, who are you?
Again, I'm Brandon McBride. I'm a senior consultant with CGI Federal, the team lead for the configuration management team.
Okay.
On our project.
Tell me a little bit about configuration management. Wow, the tongue. It's really twisted my tongue for some reason. Configuration management. See, I can say it real easy. Tell me a little bit about what it is.
Sure. And the way that we're kind of taking on this aspect of configuration management for this project, it's something new to the project. It's not something that we've had in the past from a formal perspective. So we're looking at it as the mission of configuration management for our team is to develop and maintain a set of processes that govern how code is promoted through our environments. Regulate the state of our environment so that they remain consistent from beginning to end. Produce and maintain core documentation regarding the environments, processes, and procedures for managing our configurations.
So much of the process of promoting code is so automated, but you can't get past the human part to make sure that it has all the connections to the business and documentation and everything right as well. How luxurious that you have an entire team.
Yeah, it's kind of something that, especially after the DevOps Hackfest, it's something that we wanted to put in place because configuration management is really, it's a part of the DevOps toolkit, and it's something that we wanted to bring back and try and institute as much of it as we could.
Okay, now coming from Tennessee, we have David Lehman here, also with CGI Federal. Now, David, you're a build master, and I have incredible envy of your title. Tell us a little bit about who you are, David.
Well, I pretty much volunteered for the position because it was called Buildmaster, and I thought it was pretty awesome. But I work on Brandon's team. I'm on the configuration management team as well. So my main responsibility is making builds, anything that involves the build, code management, our source control, and all the way up to deploying those builds to the environment. And anything in between, such as automating deployments and actually even creating those environments.
Nice. And out of curiosity, in CGI Federal, actually, David, tell me just a drop about CGI Federal. What is CGI Federal?
CGI Federal is a subsidiary of CGI that contracts to our government and supports government clients.
Okay, I got it. And do you have a lot of code bases that you're promoting, or is it one massive code base?
We're up to about three right now. Or four, four.
And I suppose as you start paying more attention to it and automating it and putting it in process, is your promotion going faster?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, spoil a little bit what we're talking about the Hackfest to come out of just where we should automate and immediately and where we should wait and everything. And so we've already seen some benefits from that.
Nice. Very nice. All right. So from Microsoft, we have a handful of guys on the call as well, including Kevin. Hi, Kevin Rimdy. Nice to see you again. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Hey, my pleasure, Jerry. Good to see you.
All right. It's hard to imagine, but there may be one person watching the show that says, Kevin who? And let's just help that one person.
All right, that one person might be, well, I don't know who that person is, but anyway.
Let's call him Bob.
Bob. Hey, Bob, I'm Kevin. My name is Kevin Remedy. I'm a senior technical evangelist with Microsoft on the DX team in the U.S. As a technical evangelist, my role is to talk to as many developers and development organizations, IT professionals, and I kind of represent, at least personally, more on the ops side of DevOps, so anything infrastructure and having to do with, I'm particularly passionate about infrastructure as code, which is why I think I was hopefully helpful in this particular instance with CGI Federal, but really, really passionate about IT and passionate about good solutions and DevOps.
I cannot wait to talk a little bit more about infrastructure as code with you. But before we do, we have Brent Steinman. He is yet another. There are words, certain words that belong in titles that are just absolutely made. Master is absolutely one. That is terrific. I always feel like the word hemisphere needs to be in there for me to really feel like I've made it. Architect is right there, an Azure architect inside Microsoft. Brent, thanks for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
So I'm a senior software development engineer based with the Technical Evangelism and Development Group out of Microsoft. I'm actually based in Minneapolis, even though I work with a lot of the great folks out of the Microsoft headquarters in the Pacific Northwest.
Nice. What do you do on a daily basis?
Well, I've partnered with key independent software vendors or ISV partners like CGI Federal, helping drive their adoption of the cloud by helping them avoid common pitfalls, some of the gotchas that just come with adopting new technologies. You can almost think of me as like a technical concierge service.
A technical concierge. I love it. I love it. You're like a cloud valet.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. So Kevin, also a butler in your spare time, I know. Now, Kevin, tell me a little bit about this. We know we have a Hackfest because we've already been talking about it. A Hackfest is a little bit different than a hackathon where you're just kind of creating something for the heck of it. This is where we go in, and we really are strategically working with customers. And tell me a little bit about the one with CGI.
Yeah, this was really a fun opportunity. Myself and Brent and a few others came out to CGI Federal in Virginia, and we had the opportunity to sit down with them and kind of get a feel for what their development lifecycle looks like. And really based on what we find from that, then we're able to say, okay, these are things that we could improve on. Which do we want to hack on? What do we want to learn more about in more detail and actually start implementing a proof of concept in some areas? And so a lot of great folks from CGI Federal joined us there from various disciplines, various parts of the process as far as building their product. And the week started was a day to do something called a value stream mapping session. So value stream map, we call it VSM. So if I say VSM, now you know I'm talking about value stream mapping. It's a intense whiteboarding session, really. Someone kind of drives the conversation and says, okay, let's start at the end and work our way to the beginning. And okay. I'm sure we'll probably show some graphics of what a VSM result looks like when we have this video up and edited, but maybe over my face right now, if for all I know, that'd be a good thing. But basically, how does it get into the hands of the customer? Okay, what happens before that? Okay, what happens before that? How many people are involved in that step? How much time does that particular step take? What's the percentage that you consider that maybe we call it a scrap rate, that maybe things need to go back to an earlier step? So for example, during QA, is there some amount of work that has to go back to the developers and so on? And you look at the flow of work from the time the planning is iterating and from when it gets into the developers' hands and how many developers may be working on it, what's the process of the handoff to then get it into QA and so on. And overall, when you're done with this diagram with all the timings of how much time each process takes and what the total lead time is for the entire process, you get a good idea of where time is spent. And then you can kind of look at it again and say, okay, here's some areas where we could probably, maybe throw some DevOps practices at. We can see here's a waste. There's a manual.
Now wait just a second, Kevin. So what you're putting on the board here in a VSM really isn't anything new. Some of this is process that is just assumed inside the business, inside the culture of my company. And then we hand it off to the developer, they give it back to us. And you say, okay, you hand it off to the developer, you give it back to us. Wait a second. who hands it off? How does it get handed off? What's the effort it is to hand it off? And then how long does it usually take? Give me some averages, some highs and lows. How many developers is that? What's the cost of development? And then, so you're saying, let's just talk about this at a super high level. Let's actually measure it.
Let's measure it as best we can. And, you know, with the understanding that a lot of times it's going to be a guess. I mean, it's just kind of a best guess of what we think it's been taking. Now, if they have actual numbers from past experience, that's awesome. A lot of times we're doing with this with companies who are relatively new in this whole process. And so they have no idea. They may be building a brand new product. But a lot of companies that have been doing it for a while, as I mentioned, having a whole bunch of people in the room that are knowledgeable about their particular area of the life cycle, and not being aware of what other people are doing at various points, not being aware that this particular step requires Bob again. Let's pick on Bob again. Bob has to always do this step, and that's a heroic feat. And so we put a big red H at that part of the process, saying this is a hero thing. We need to look at that later. This is a manual process that we might be able to automate in some way. This is an area where there's a lot of waste happening. There's too much scrap going back, and so on. So we mark out these big red marks on the diagram, and those are then going to be opportunities, areas for improvement that we can look at and say, okay, of the seven plus a couple of minor other DevOps practices, what could fit in these different areas? Does this building of a configuration environment that's been kind of static for a while, can we build that through code? Can we build infrastructure as code? Is there a point where we're checking in the code, but we're not building it automatically? It's going to a process of approval. For example, I recently worked with a company, not CGI Federal, but a different company, who actually had a manual step every step of the way, and they were rebuilding their code four times, and they couldn't build the code until they had a meeting, and those meetings only happened one time a week. And so, you look at that.
I think I've worked for that company. Oh,
hey, this could be improved in some way. So it's things
now,
like that.
Now, Kevin, what I'm hearing you say is something that it sounds a little bit familiar. If I were to step back out of the software industry for a second, and I was going to step into, say, the automotive industry and be and go to Toyota, they probably have something very similar to this that says, starting with a lump of metal all the way to an Accord, we have every single piece identified of what it takes and what it really requires as far as time, effort, and cost. And is it that type of regimen and that's that type of learning that we're applying then to the software industry?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, it did start in the auto industry, and it started very much in the manufacturing industry. And companies that became very smart about understanding how the flow of work moved from place to place to place, and where the bottlenecks were, where things were queuing up, and this notion then out of that, this efficient manufacturing value stream mapping can be applied to many different disciplines, and certainly manufacturing is a great example of that. We have kind of taken it and abbreviated some of it to fit, at least a little better for our purposes, the software world and the software development lifecycle.
Okay, now talk to me just a little bit here, Brent. You're in a value stream mapping meeting. How stressful is that?
It's actually not that stressful, I think, for those of us that were going through it, especially those of us that were helping lead CGI through it, because it's a discovery process. It's a chance to stand up and ask questions and investigate, and I think any good technology person is probably used to doing that. I think it's more stressful for some of the business owners that are in the room, because it really peels back the layers of the onion and helps you find the things that were broken in your process you may not have even realized. Huh. And as a business stakeholder, that's always a very uncomfortable position to be in, because the minute you identify a choke point, there's always somebody that's looking around going, well, how did that happen? And that ultimately falls on you. So I think it's stressful for them, but at the same time, it was a relief that these areas they may not even known about at first, they now have an inkling about, and they know what their people are going through, and when we're done, have an idea about what they need to do to try and fix it.
And there's a role of leadership in a process like this, where you start to identify opportunities to improve, not opportunities to blame somebody, right? I mean, you have to think of, there's a lot of people participating for a lot of reasons, and leadership in this sort of investigation really can make things very positive and kind of defuse the stress point.
Yep. It's like that old cycle of change diagram where they said, here are the phases everybody goes through. And you really have to skip right past that blame and fear stage and go into embracing it and saying, here's how we're going to address it.
Sure.
We actually do go into it with the ground rules in place. And a couple of those ground rules are no finger pointing. There are no bad ideas, but no finger pointing. And no, and rank doesn't hold any value here. It's everybody's opinion is valued. Yep.
Sure. There are no bad ideas, but it's not a guarantee that every idea is a good idea. Now, David, here we are. So we're standing in front of a whiteboard. And slowly you start to see this process unfold, more and more ink on the board. What were some of the things that you saw that maybe surprised you? Were there parts of things where you're like, wow?
One thing that really surprised me was how long it took end-to-end to get software, get changes from conception to implementation.
Sure. And how many of those do you think are technical barriers and how many are business barriers?
It seemed to be about, I'd say about half and half.
Mm-hmm.
About half. There's a lot of waste up on the front end and things that where we're trying to actually get specs and stuff like that. But then there's stuff like our database isn't in source control, so we have to go and figure out how to do that. And so throughout the process, we kept going back to this is a hindrance. This is something that every time we reach this, the process just stops until somebody goes in and manually does this.
Sure. And now, Brandon, as you're watching this happen and you're sitting next to David and everything's getting laid out, how difficult is it for you? You're halfway through this mapping. How difficult is for you to say, okay, let's map the whole thing out versus I can solve that problem right now? You want to jump to the solution for it.
Yeah, that was particularly difficult, especially during the value stream mapping, because a lot of these things that we hit on hit close to home because I'm in it every day. It was difficult because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, yeah, I know what we can do to fix that. But, sitting down and actually going through the whole end-to-end process helped us to pinpoint the areas of waste in our process, allowed us to identify the improvements across the board based on the waste, the type of waste.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
heroics, cross-train and augment. Manual tasks, automate. That's a huge one for us. Automate our build and deployment process. Include everything in a package, the UI and the data. Because manual tasks, which we all know, the more you have, you tend to introduce more scrap there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it hurts your consistency.
Sure, Kevin. What's it look like when I'm looking at a value map? For Company A, Company B, and Company CGI Federal, are they exactly the same? Is there I'm sure there is a handful of commonality in just the approach, but is it different for every company, or is there a kind of cookie cutter?
Well, the kind of cookie cutter, certainly has to do with what software organizations have been doing for many, many years now, and that is we got to plan the product out, we have to develop the product, we have to test the product, and we have to release the product. And so those are the big picture items. And some companies will have an additional, we call this QA, but we actually have user acceptance testing where business owners actually get involved in that too. Mm-hmm. So the big picture, that's fairly consistent. Then it starts to differ a little bit with regard to the process of approvals and of rolling into new environments, if new environments are involved, for the different steps along the way. For example, another company that I talked to had a QA environment that was completely separate from the user acceptance testing, which is completely separate from the production, and they couldn't do anything with the QA environment with multiple releases. They had to wait for the first one to be done before it was moved on, and then they could actually install. So things like that happen that kind of make things interesting and fun. And different tracks that that things go based on, is this a new feature or just a fix? And sometimes the fix tends to skip to the front of the line and not necessarily go through the all the iterative planning that some companies would do on a new feature. So there's aspects of that. How frequently do we roll out new features? Do we have features coming out in major releases versus just small releases more frequently? And if we're going to be coming out with big releases less frequently, where is that all queued up? Is there some place that it's all bunching up and waiting to go out as one release?
And, I suppose there's just a little bit of heartache in that, you might identify a process that's actually long and convoluted, and then the fix that you've come up to improve the process has to go through that process before you can change the process, right? Because this is our long, convoluted process that we have, That's the way everything has to go through until we start fixing things that are in there as well. Let me ask you, Brent, when you walk into a situation like this, what are you expecting to see? There's almost always, you know, I'm probably going to see these three things as the low-hanging fruit to jump in and go. Every company has sort of the same problem in this area. Where do you look first and expect to find something?
That's a hard question because so many customers, I think, are so different. But yet, as Kevin pointed out, there's also a lot of similarities. So I'd say that the first thing I personally always look for is chances to improve the environments, because one of my big passions is around resiliency. Mm. So how do I look for areas where things are extremely fragile from an infrastructure standpoint, especially being a cloud architect?
Yeah.
So one of the big discoveries we had was just this notion that as you start adopting the cloud, infrastructure is not something you create once and keep forever. It's something you can create dynamically whenever you need it. So one of the big topics a lot of folks will have come up is environment drift. Production doesn't match staging, which doesn't match testing, which means along the way defects creep in that we didn't find in an earlier environment. Hmm. And with the cloud, you can solve that by saying, well, every time we do a build and a regression test, we do it in a clean environment.
Yeah.
One that doesn't have artifacts.
Environment drift. I have to say, I haven't heard that term. That's terrific. I totally get it. That's perfect. So I could totally see that. And probably another one is, you know, hey, we drew your entire map. I don't see any cloud activity going on here. There may be a little opportunity to start with just right there. Now, David, let me ask you a question. You're looking at all of these opportunities, and you probably get a little itchy because you want to go and do it right away, and you probably get a little antsy because all of a sudden the list is getting longer and longer. How do you decide how to draw the line between good and good enough? I mean, is there a time when you're like, that could really be improved, but man, that we're going to have to put that way back on the backlog because there are all these other things. What do you use, or what have you seen valuable to prioritize areas to improve?
Well, there was a handful of the solutions that came out of there that I was able just to do when we started solutioning out ideas. I was able to just implement right away. I'm like, hey, I know how to do that. I just never thought to do that. So here, it's done. There's a couple things that are just like, well, this is a big hindrance into our process. I need to figure out how to automate this portion and work with people. And I mean, so we got ideas onto it, and then immediately go to that. So there's certain things that it's real easy to see the value in the process, how much this time this will save you, how many errors that you have. Really look at that scrap rate and say that, hey, this fails back half the time. We need to take human intervention out of it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just obvious, and I might be able to come in and lead you through a mapping, but at the same time, because you know your business so well, these low-hanging fruits they glow brighter and brighter because you're so familiar with the process and your business as well. Now, Brent told us it's not a one and done. This is the sort of thing you come back to. Brandon, how do you feel with the value stream map? How frequently do you want to go through a process like this?
I think it's good to go through a process like this, a few times a year, because, like Brent said, you know, it's not the end solution. You start your value stream mapping, and then you go through these initial, you know, round of improvements that you want to make based off what you get off of the mapping. And then I think it's a great idea to go back through and do another one just so that you keep a pulse on where you are and make sure you keep your end goal in sight and you keep working towards improving your processes to the point where you can do, you know, for example, continuous integration end to end. You've lowered your scrap rate down to where your goal and you're delivering quality solutions to the customer on a consistent basis.
Sure. And I mean, who are we fooling ourselves? Technology doesn't hold still. The industry doesn't hold still. And even our own business doesn't hold still. The things that we missed are one thing, but things change over time, and sometimes we're too close to see it. It's handy to have a guy like Kevin come in and say, what's this new little dot that we didn't have before? Now, Kevin, I know you've done value stream mapping before with other customers. I know there are some aspects. Let's step back just a little bit. What are some things that you just see coming up all of the time? One of the things I know we talked about was infrastructure as code. Maybe we kind of head that direction. What what are What are you talking about?
Well, when we start these processes out and we kind of give an introduction to the companies, we sit them down and say, look, this is what we want to do. This is why you're here. And we introduce them to the notion of the value stream mapping and what it will do for them. We then talk about the DevOps practices that we should be kind of keeping in the back of our minds, saying these are the kind of a well-recognized things that you can apply to improve things such as continuous integration, continuous deployment, automated testing, being able to define your infrastructure as code, being able to define configuration as code, which is part of that as well, things of that nature, release management. These are all aspects of DevOps. And so what we end up doing it depends on, as Brent said, you know, oftentimes there's opportunities to leverage the cloud or at least cloud-like technologies to, for example, build your code outside of your environment, doing your infrastructure. Take advantage of tools like Visual Studio Team Services and actually build this process that detects when code is checked in and is ready to go and does the build and automates the test. And if the test succeeds, deploy. And all the developer has to find out is, yes, it's all good and all green. And now you can go, it can hand off to QA automatically. So things like that. So I think... if I'm getting straying from your question, what am I seeing more? Because I'm passionate about this. What am I seeing more frequently? Definitely areas for automation. I think that's a big part of it. And automation not only in the sense of, removing manual steps that are prone to error, but also automations that do large amount of work for you that you would ordinarily have had to do or have left alone. Like Brent was talking about, if the opportunity arises to automate the building and the configuration of an infrastructure to support a new release or a new set of features, that's great. I know it's going to be consistent because I've defined it in code. I've defined it in a way that will always apply the same way no matter what I do to it. And I can add a couple of variables or parameters in place to say, okay, as an example, Azure Resource Manager. We actually, in our hack with CGI Federal, one of the avenues we took was to define our infrastructure using Azure Resource Manager templates in order then to define the infrastructure for a machine or machines, the networking that's required for them, the storage that's required for them, the configuration of those machines. So what roles and features need to be on this particular server? Are there other services that need to be there and configured? And we can actually automate the process of configuring the machine as well. So once we did the value stream mapping, we decided, okay, here's an area we can address and learn more about. Brent did some in-depth training on Azure Resource Manager with a couple folks. I worked on hacking using Azure Resource Manager templates to do automated configuration management. We had some other folks working on automation through PowerShell and other pieces. I think there were other pieces around authentication that Brent was also targeting or tackling. It was, again, kind of back to our Hackfest week, it was the opportunity to see, okay, this is what we learned, this is where we want to improve, this is what we need to learn, and then let's do it, let's actually learn it, let's actually build this stuff.
Sure, okay, so if I declaratively identify all of the templates and the configuration that under the umbrella of infrastructure as code allow me to build out these environments in a predictable way, well, you tell me, Brent, how much easier has my life been because I've chosen to go into the cloud instead of having on-prem devices to try and keep in sync?
That's a difficult question to answer. The part of it is the work it takes to get there. While Azure does have our new Azure Resource, not new, it's 2 years old at this point, the Azure Resource Manager pattern for declaring the resources are going to be leveraged. That's been around for a little while, but it's admittedly not as mature as things like Chef and Puppet and other solutions to do that infrastructure for you. But what we're trying to bring into it is this notion of being able to have that template once and eventually being able to use that in the cloud or on-prem. The story's not fully complete yet. We're still working on the on-prem portions of that via the Azure stack and some other technologies, but eventually it'll get there, and when that happens, it'll really give you a unified management plane for both cloud and on-premise resources that allow you to treat even physical servers sitting in your own network almost as this infrastructure as code approach.
Oh, once that's
beautiful. Once that happens, life will get really easy.
Nice. Great. Let's talk about the window we're in right now then. So we have life will get really easy, which is, just couple of weeks away. But in the meantime, it turns out my company has invested pretty heavily in Chef. How compatible is my desire to go into the Azure world and the fact that I'm using Chef so heavily?
Well, if you wanted to use Chef and Puppet in Azure today, you still could. And the nice thing is the models are actually fairly compatible with the resource manager model. The resource manager has some great tools to help you say, I need a virtual machine. I need it in a virtual network. And once those pieces are in place, you can then go, I want to put a Chef extension into this virtual machine and connect it back to my Chef master so that he can give it commands to customize the internal on those VMs.
I see. Okay. Now, Kevin, your passion for this is bubbling over just a little bit. You jump in on this question.
Yeah, the way I like to look at it is there's infrastructure as code at the higher level really encompasses two main aspects. One is the configuration of or the building of the infrastructure itself, and the other is the configuration of the infrastructure. So Azure Resource Manager templates, the main use for that would be to build the infrastructure, to build the virtual machines. And yes, the extensibility of it means you can also do some configuration of those as well. Chef and Puppet, Ansible, PowerShell, DSC, these are all configuration engines. So they're kind of like on top of the infrastructure that exists. Now, how do I actually configure this box to be a web server or an application server or a database server or whatever you're going to be adding to that?
Sure.
So it's two different aspects of the two different sides of the same coin, both representing infrastructure as code.
Sure.
Yep, I got to tip my hat to Kevin on that one. You put it a lot better than I did.
Kevin's just if anybody is good at talking.
There you
Kevin,
go.
Kevin is the best. Talk about somebody who deserves master in his title. Right. That's exactly right. all right, David, back to you. Just I want before we end here, I want you to be able to speak to the developer and the IT pro listening right now, and they're hearing, wow, it seems like this was really a success story for CGI, that really we were able to see some real improvements, but they have some trepidation. They're a little bit nervous about this whole, golly, can I go into the whole gigantic process of VSM? What would you say to somebody that is thinking that way?
Brandon and I were pretty much the owners of the process as much as anyone could be.
Sure.
But even though when we mapped all that out, we saw like, man, you put this all together and not just put the steps out, but put the stuff that happens between the steps and what it takes to get from step B to step C.
Sure.
It really puts in perspective. We had a unique opportunity that we went in on Monday and did value stream mapping. And also on Monday, we started a new process. So we value stream mapped a brand new process and got to catch things early on in the process and fix some things because we'd just changed our process to do it that way.
Brandon, how important is it not to wait? It sounds like you guys made some improvements quickly. What's the value of anybody who's like, we'll try this next quarter? What would you say to them?
I would say don't wait because you do the value stream mapping. You identify all these areas of improvement that you may not have thought would be there or you would need. And the value you get from it is the turnaround's almost immediate. Once you get these things set up and you know, you see that the result, you see it in your processes all the way through to the response from the customer. They're getting their product, what they want quicker. They're getting it more quality, and it kind of speaks for itself. It's
yeah.
Very easy. Don't wait. Once you do it once, you can apply the idea of a value stream mapping to almost anything that you do.
Yeah, that's right.
So don't wait.
Well, you know what? Hey, I'm glad you said quality because this isn't all about saving money. Sometimes this is really about improving a process to improve the product, and that's a real value that's more than just for you. It's for your customers. It's for everybody out there. Kevin, I can imagine there's somebody listening right now that says something along the lines of, this is great for CGI Federal because they had Microsoft come in. We may not be able to have Microsoft come in. What do you say to those guys? How do they get started? Give them just some pointers and resources.
Well, yeah, you know, we actually have a great set of case studies, and CGI Federal is up there with them as well. And I'm sure where we post this video, you'll be able to find the link to the case study that goes into the detail of what we actually did with these folks and how and some additional resources at the end of that as well. Links to, you know, what is a value stream map, what our value stream map look like, what are some of the code samples that we put together for their particular situation. And beyond that, you know, there's some great resources. There's a really good book on value stream mapping. It's kind of the value stream mapping Bible that we all have read in order to kind of prepare for this. Other resources certainly around DevOps.
What's it called?
I think it's just called Value Stream Mapping. I'm just looking to see if it's on my shelf over here, but I know I've got the book.
Straightforward.
But we'll make sure. Yeah.
All right. So
we'll make sure we get that. We do. It's not a novel. I mean, it's no Phoenix Project. Okay, for those who are in DevOps, the Phoenix Project is another great resource. This is more of a manual, so it's a sleeper, but it's it's good information. So I do recommend it.
And it's not this gargantuan task either. It's not like you're climbing Mount Everest. This is really about just getting started. You'll start to see the benefits, and it'll just build its own momentum to get started in a more productive way and a more deeper way, right? It's just about introspectively looking at your own processes in an honest way and just being, you know, really detail-minded so you can say, what does it really cost? What does it really involve? And I think having CGI Federal just have this glowing way of talking about it and you're like, yeah, we, you know, first day, we already started new things and, all, you know, even it even gives us adrenaline jump into this configuration team and all, you know, all of these things. It's very inspiring to think that all you need is a whiteboard and a clear mind, and here we go, and we can really start making a difference without, I mean, this isn't an investment in software. This isn't an investment in the cloud. This is an investment in process and really understanding, I guess, your own business, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Kevin, thanks for being on the show. This has been fascinating.
Absolutely.
Value stream mapping. I think this might be the first one that we've had for VSM, and I've been waiting for them to happen. I've been seeing these case studies come together. I'm glad you could be the first.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, Brent, thanks for being on the phone, man. I appreciate talking to you and all your insights.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You bet. David, Brandon, congratulations. Great job with terrific titles. Let's let's try and talk again. And, hey, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Jerry.
Good to be here.
All right. We'll see you guys again.